Good morning, everyone, or good afternoon, or good evening, depending upon where on this rotating globe you happen to be this morning, this afternoon, or this evening. I mean, if you look at our widget on the homepage of theothersideofmidnight.com, and welcome to another episode, if I didn't say that, we're in 115 countries. We span the globe. Literally, this little radio show, which I started with Art's help and nudging and kind of dropping me into the pool just about a year ago, and we've now migrated from Dark Matter to AM First Radio and KCAA and our affiliates literally now from coast to coast, Maine, if I can remember Maine's affiliate letters, and Geno's, let's see, K-I-Y-Q? Yeah, anyway. So we're being picked up by lots of affiliates, and we're talking to more and more people. If you go and click on the widget, you'll see that we've had something like 79,000 people visited us just in the last few weeks, and that will increase, that will accelerate. But what I want to get at is, for all of you in different cultures and different parts of the planet tonight who are listening, and again, admittedly, most of our listeners are in North America at the moment, but we do have Europeans, and we do have people in the Far East, and we do have people in Australia, and, you know, you just can't keep up with it. But for all of those who are listening, what I've tried to do with the show, as I said a couple nights ago, is to lay out connections. And in the last few days, we've had a heavy emphasis on the connections of stuff down here, the connections of things going on Earth. I mean, if you look at our homepage tonight, and then you click on Radio with Pictures. Item number one, what pivot? Donald Trump revives Pocahontas attacks on Elizabeth Warren. Item number two, Trump says those who don't support him should be barred from office. Item number four, frontman Farage, he was the guy behind the Brexit vote, now deserted by Brexit bandmates. That's a British headline, and you should read that. And then finally, item number three, out of sequence. The supercavitation that they've now discovered, this is people working with the Navy, that could basically make submarines move really, really fast. Now, why am I talking about submarines on a show where we're going to talk about interstellar flight and travel and connection? Because the way they're making submarines travel really, really fast is by encasing them in a bubble, an air bubble. Underwater, that's the theory. And if you put them in a bubble, you can make the bubble move through the water so much faster than the submarine, the metallic shell of the vehicle itself. So if you look at this in terms of interstellar analogies, there have been a number of people working on interstellar models for interstellar flight, interstellar technologies, interstellar propulsion, and a few of them basically are looking at an approach which would encase the starship in a warp bubble, kind of like Star Trek, and it's that bubble that would move through space at many times multiples of the speed of light. Very interesting analogy, and it's intriguing that finally, after we've known about supercavitation, which is making bubbles underwater from highly rotating objects, once we discovered that, it's like, why did it take so long for someone to suggest what seems kind of obvious and kind of analogous? Well, assuming this is a progression, and assuming that interstellar flight is not impossible, if we ourselves and our primitive technology projections can imagine ways to do it, what if a lot of other folks already have? And what if we're not even aware because someone does not want us to be aware of the greater good and the greater civilization and the greater humanity that's out there? We're going to talk about all those things this morning on The Other Side of Midnight in just 3 minutes. So don't go away. We shall return. And we are back on The Other Side of Midnight. Welcome, everyone. My guest this morning, I mean, I have no idea where this conversation is going to go because, frankly, it's rooted in, well, we're going to find out what it's rooted in. Let me begin. Paris Tosin is a Canadian author, a rogue researcher, and a Stellan activist, we're going to find out what that is, who was visited by three interdimensional elves in 2005 in Vancouver, British Columbia, and his life has never been the same. Let me read to you from Paris's latest book, The Earth Colonizing Handbook of Generation Stellan. Here's a question. What's the proper procedure for when you were visited by three interdimensional people who decide to teleport into your apartment but choose to remain cloaked in invisibility? I mean, is there a procedure? A protocol, perhaps? Is there a 1-800-TELEPORT you can call? Or is a direct dial to the Central Intelligence Agency more appropriate? In the middle of November 2005, in a moment, without notice, I had gone from an ignorant UFO skeptic into Richard Dreyfuss in Close Encounters of the Third Kind. I looked around my bachelor suite. It was kind of like 2 or 3 in the morning. There were no witnesses, just me, and three sort of invisible men. My first thought, this is interesting. And it was interesting. I mean, very interesting, despite the fact that UFOs and ETs don't officially or logically exist. I mean, we're told that all the time. Here were three men from another dimension, off-planet type, standing in my Vancouver apartment. You can imagine the irony, or the embarrassment. I wasn't sure which. And I wasn't embarrassed for me. I was embarrassed for NASA and SETI. If you don't know who they are, it's okay, because after meeting three off-planet men, I realized that both NASA and SETI were just well-funded acronyms. And as far as they were concerned, these three off-planet guys in my apartment did not exist, and yet there they were. You know how when someone stands in front of you, you can kind of feel their energy or their aura? If you close your eyes, you can feel the presence of a living person. I felt three presences in front of me, even though, and I have to be truthful, they were sort of invisible. Got that? They were invisible, and I felt the presence of three people. Paris, what the hell are you trying to tell us?
Well, I'm trying to explain a supernatural, inexplicable experience that I had that was neither a hallucination nor the result of some drug-induced vivid dream. And it was something that was tangible. It was physical. It had many elements to it. Because not only did these three beings, these people, appear, enter my apartment, not only could I feel their energy, not only could I see their shapes, because some people have what they used to call second sight. And I think a lot of more people say the third eye in the modern era. Mm-hmm. I apparently had this second sight, so I could see three people, and that wasn't enough to convince me.
Hang on. How were they dressed?
They were dressed. I described them as wearing like swashbuckling clothes, so it's very fancy, refined clothing, but elegant too, kind of like, you know, the British royalty.
Oh, when you say swashbuckling, you don't mean Pirates of the Caribbean.
They're not pirates. It's like the lords, you know, the barons and the lords of the old times, with royal class.
With the powdered wigs and the ruffles and the brocade.
I couldn't see that clearly, the powdered wigs. They had hair. They had very refined features, very sharp features. And they were quite tall. All three of them were quite tall.
What color?
They were pale-skinned.
So
there were no dark-skinned.
Like albino, maybe?
Like pale-skinned, like they haven't seen sunlight.
Ah, so they've been in a basement for 10 weeks or 10 months or whatever. Okay.
10 months or, yeah.
Okay, let's leave that scene there. You're standing in your apartment in Vancouver. You got three guys that have just come into your consciousness in there, and obviously didn't use the front door. Who is Paris Tosin? Why should we pay attention to this story? Take us back to growing up. When did you look around at the world and begin to wonder if it was exactly the way you were being told it was?
I'm not the kind of person to have had this childhood knowledge of things being more than they are. I was always living in a basically a cocoon, a kind of an induced sleep, whereby I can live a normal life.
You mean you were a typical suburban kid?
I was a very typical suburban kid.
What did
I never
your dad
watched.
Do? What did your dad do?
My father was a blue collar worker. Ended up working as a butcher for the remainder of his life.
Okay, and your mom?
My mother was a housewife. Both my parents they immigrated here, so they were immigrants.
And, from?
From Italy.
Okay. That has an amazingly rich cultural history, so we'll come back to that in a minute. So you went through school, and you went to college, I presume?
Went to college, and I went to university. I finished a degree in business administration at SFU, Simon Fraser University in Burnaby.
So your upbringing and your background and your profession was as far from fringy, kooky, weird, bump-in-the-night things as you could possibly get.
I absolutely had no interest in anything supernatural, superstitious, or religious phenomenon, UFO, ETs. I had no interest. I was neither a skeptic nor a believer. I had no interest in...
You never watched X-Files?
I watched X-Files... But mostly X-Files was about these strange chasing monsters in the night, and they had the occasional chasing the alien embryo.
Mm.
I found that interesting. That the most interesting alien film I watched that I remember was They Live.
Oh, the one with the glasses?
The one with the glasses.
Ah. Well, that's all about seeing reality that everybody else is telling you is nuts.
That's right. And when I saw that film, it had a profound effect on me. Something resonated with that film, so much so that I began to talk to all my friends about it, even my older friends. I said, there's something here. Did you see this film? And they all told me that I was crazy. It's just a movie.
Hmm.
And don't believe this stuff.
Now, did that come out in the 70s?
That was in the 80s, I think.
Oh, okay. Because I've only seen, obviously, it when it's running late at night or something, but... It's a remarkably interesting film because it raises all kinds of issues about everybody being asleep, and those that aren't are basically put down as being crazy as opposed to the only ones awake.
That's right. And John Carpenter, he used this metaphor. He used this tool, the device, the glasses.
Mm.
So that somebody puts on the glasses and they can see. And that's a tool you use in a film script, because in real life you don't have the glasses. You wake up.
Hmm.
So it's kind of a metaphor for waking up.
So what woke you up?
So that movie started to wake me up, but when I went to my friends and my family and even my mentors, they all said it's a fantasy, it's a movie, and I went back to sleep.
Okay. Now, were they addressing specifically the idea that you had the glasses and you could see who the ETs were, or were they talking about that metaphorically in terms of all of reality? It's all fine. There's nothing wrong. Go back to sleep.
That's right. This world is built on every structure you see, hear, and feel is telling you go back to sleep in every way imaginable, whether it's an advertisement, whether it's a film, whether it's a mentor, whether it's your education system. So I had no avenue for waking up.
Oh, and you never ever watched Star Trek.
I was a fan of Star Trek, but that was set in the 23rd century, so it was quite far removed.
Oh, so you didn't think it was relevant?
I didn't think it was relevant. But I liked Star Trek. I didn't reject the idea of these alien life forms going out to different planets. They never wore spacesuits when they landed on a planet. They could just land in a breathable atmosphere.
Yeah.
So it had this concept, a layered concept of habitable planets, which was rejected for most of my life. Only until recent years have scientists said, well, there are habitable planets, and now we are finding them.
Oh, my God. We have thousands now, and the projections are for billions and billions, and that's just Earth's out there. So,
right.
Yeah, and there's been a total revolution from when you were growing up, and it was kind of, we're it.
Well, I grew up with, we are the most intelligent and the only species in the universe. There is nothing else out there. And if anything is out there, it's a space monster, and it wants to invade. It wants to eat your children. Mm. It wants to blow everybody up.
And you bought that.
I bought it. I believed it 100%. And I never thought about space.
Wow. Okay.
Well, I never watched.
See, this to me, this is really important, Paris, because for someone to have such a dramatic turn of perspective, right. It's not easy to shake a human being's foundation of their whole core reality. So whatever happened to you, if it turned you from this uncurious skeptic into someone who now is arguing that you want to be the first interstellar ambassador here on planet Earth, I'm being kind of hypered on that.
Okay, thank you.
it sounds to me like something did happen, so this curiosity begins to awaken with this film. What happened next?
Then life happened. Nothing happened after that. I went back into the hypnotic, hypno-induced state of living life.
Okay.
So there was no occurrence. There was no interaction. But I've always had this, what's interesting, I've always had this kind of acceptance of supernatural things, but no interest in it. No, I did not pursue this in any way.
Oh, in other words, it's like you know that Tanzania exists, but you never really plan a trip.
Right. I know that there are interdimensional beings, but I have no interest in it. It was just nothing. I would never pursue it. I was never afraid of it.
Well, wait. Had you actually consciously said, okay, there are probably a whole bunch of other folks out there. They leave me alone, I'll leave them alone, I'm going to live my life. In other words, it was a possibility that was academically there, but until they reached up and called you or walked and knocked on your front door, you weren't going to pay any mind.
Right. It's almost like there's a firewall between them and my understanding of the world, so that I could not and I would not cross over through that firewall, and I didn't have the ability to cross through that firewall. So it's almost as if there was a firewall in my mind.
I was just going to say, it sounds like it's not just non-interest. It's almost like there's a negative interest. So if you get interested, then something cuts in and you're put back to sleep. So you're going to be interested. Is that what
That's
you're saying?
Right.
That means you were programmed somehow.
That is the That is the conclusion one gets after meeting these interstellar cultures and interacting with them, and you realize that something was preventing you from ever accessing that information. There was some kind of structure in the mind, in the consciousness.
Now, this we're not talking just about you now. We're extrapolating to 7 billion people?
At this point now, that I would extrapolate to the entire planet, that there are structures in the mind, and these are not by accident, these are done by professionals, that they can put structures in the mind, in the subconscious, so that you never pursue this in this topic, and if you pursue it, you don't believe it. Mm. And if it's true, it's a joke, or it's just a fantasy.
Kind of like every UFO story is at the end of the 11 o'clock news, and the two newscasters will inevitably look at each other and giggle as they tell the story.
That's right. So that's the implant. I call them thought implants.
Okay, let me back up. Are you saying that 7 billion people have been individually programmed by some agency, or are you saying the terrestrial governments have kind of agreed that we should be living in quarantine, and so all the media that's allowed basically carries these redundant themes? We're the only one. There's nothing out there. It's nothing but deserts, nothing but rocks, nothing but craters, radiation. There's no living beings but here, and it takes one hell of a thing to wake up from that mass cultural media programming. Is that your model?
Well, I'm saying, yeah, there's both of those things that you've said.
There's the individual genetic programming by somebody. Then there's mass cultural programming by everybody here on Earth who's running something that doesn't want anybody outside intruding and basically changing their very cozy game.
Right. There's this social engineering, this hypnosis that there's nothing out there. Don't look at the space. Don't think about space. Don't believe in aliens.
Well, wait a minute. Wait. How do you explain me then? And millions of Star Trek fans, and Star Wars fans, and Battlestar Galactica fans, and 2001 fans, and The Time Traveler, and Bradbury, and Isaac, and Arthur. And, in other words, there's a huge body of people that basically exist that say your model is not correct because they're fascinated. They're obsessively interested. They just don't cross the little boundary that says it could be real.
That's that firewall. That's the structure
of
the brain.
So that's where the firewall occurs in. Their interest is sublimated, you're saying. And again, I'm putting words in your mouth because I want to get people to get this crystal clear idea before we get to the details of your experiences, which are riveting. The model is that even if you have curiosity, at some point you come up against this, you call it a firewall. Very interesting term. I like that. And so you turn yourself off from thinking that this fiction could be reality, and you basically double back on yourself, and everything is fine.
That's right. It's like, you know, you have a thought, you start to believe in an alien, you watch a good movie, let's say you watch Starman, you say, well, what if aliens are real?
Oh, that was a wonderful movie.
And that's a great movie, John Carpenter.
Again, John Carpenter.
So you start to think, well, what if? And then something happens in your mind where it reverts back to the hypnosis. There's a mechanical process in your mind, a mechanism to flip you back into the hypnosis.
Hang on. Are you saying this from experience? You've actually decoded the mechanism? You know what the words are? You know how the programming occurs? Or is this a model where you say, This is what must have to happen to people, otherwise there'd be progress?
Well, what happened to me was I broke the firewall.
Oh.
And
I was
helped by these three people and by all the experiences that followed these three people.
Well, wait, Paris, that's kind of cheating. Having three guys from some Alpha Centauri show up in your bedroom is a little different than breaking through the firewall on your own. You had help, huge help.
I had to deprogram myself by educating myself on what is real and what is not real, and to sift through all the UFO disinformation, which 98% of the UFO information is disinformation. Yeah, and all of this is part of this is all the false reality. Because if you look for information, you look, well, I look to the Pleiadians. Well, if you look at the Pleiadians, they don't exist. If I look at the cattle mutilations, well, that's just another psyop. If you look at the rectal probes, well, why would advanced beings rectal probe people? It doesn't make any sense. But that's the information we've been fed. The alien invasions.
It does make sense if governments controlling media are trying to create consciousness force screens around the world, so that every time you think of an alien, you wind up retching because your vision is going to be of a rectal probe. That kind of nonsense.
That's right. If you ask most people, even those listening to your show around the world, when they start to think about an alien, they start to have these ideas bubble up. And they get to a certain point where they become afraid, where they start to think rectal probes, where they start to think alien invasion, and the mind shuts down and reverts back to the hypnosis. That's the structure. That's a purposeful structure in the mind, and it's done by very, very talented professionals. It's not an accident.
Okay. All right. We got 3 minutes to the bottom of the hour, and then we'll hit some very specific details because, you know, I'm an evidence kind of guy. I like evidence. I love stories, but I like evidence to support stories. So you're creating the psychological model. Do you have any data in the couple of minutes we have here that people, in fact, are programmed to have this avoidance?
Well, I think we can use the number one in the radio and pictures, the first piece of evidence.
Oh, good. Let's go to radio with pictures.
And I think this very clearly shows what's happened in the mind of society.
Item number one. I recognize the image on the left. It's classic. The Day the Earth Stood Still, not by John Carpenter, but by Robert Wise. And that's Michael Rennie playing Klaatu, the alien, the humanoid alien, who comes to Earth and basically says, folks, unless you wise up and you shape up, we're not going to let you out of the solar system, and we're going to destroy you if you develop nuclear weapons and attack each other. End of discussion. So that right. was the 1950s. Now, in the 1980s, pick it up from there.
In the 1980s, you had, following the release of the 1979 Alien, then you had the release of Predator at the same time of Aliens by James Cameron, who did a wonderful job of making a movie. But what James Cameron didn't know is that there are agencies who will utilize these films to program society. So now that if you ask a person today, when they think of Alien, they think of a monster, a space monster, and they cannot even relate to a human-looking, altruistic, advanced being.
Okay, hold it there. We're at the bottom of the hour. Exactly the right place to pause till we get into the specifics, because Paris has met some of these guys, and boy, they have some news for us. You're on the other side of midnight. My guest this morning, Paris Tosin, rogue investigator, rogue researcher. I love that title. John Anthony West got a title of rogue Egyptologist, and he has it burnished over the fireplace. Anyway, we shall return. My name is Richard C. Hoagland. Don't go away. And we are back on the other side of midnight, and there's Jack Herkheimer's music, The Stargazer. Very interesting. Okay, stargazing, that's what we're going to do tonight. Let me read some more from Paris's book, because I got to say, Paris, you have an extraordinarily inviting writing style. I mean, you can make the most unbelievable things seem absolutely normal. I don't know how you do it. I got to read some more. It's just amazing. There they were, invisible, but I felt the presence of three people. That was just the hello part. The next part was that I could sort of see them. When I kind of squinted and defocused my eyes, I could see three well-dressed men. Of course, I hadn't done it before, so I wasn't all that good at it. I've now gotten much better. And then it was as if it wasn't convinced, they started speaking to me, like with their mind, or telepathy. Whatever you like. Don't tell the CIA, because they might do some mind control on you and you'll wake up and think you're Martha Stewart or Martha Stewart's long-lost dog. Don't let me get started on the CIA. There's a certain amount of assurance you get when people start speaking to you telepathically, mostly because it's never happened before. But listen, and here's the other thing. They weren't speaking English. It was an off-planet language, and apparently it made sense to me. How do I know that? Well, because I wasn't scratching my head. But don't ask me what they said, because I haven't a clue. You know how sometimes you go out with your spouse and you go out to dinner and you actually have a great conversation? Then the next day someone at work says, "What'd you guys talk about?" And you don't know. It was sort of like that. Apparently, I forgot that they were even there. That's why they came back the next two or three nights in a row. I think it was three in total, but I forget. Same time each time, same shtick. Oh, yeah, at the end of the telepathic interview, one of them would speak English with their mind and say, "We are ETs. We wish to communicate with you. We are ET." Paris, is this fiction or...
or is it something else?
Yeah.
So this is, you know, when it first happened the first night, so I was on my computer, on my office chair, in a bachelor apartment, so it's one room with the bed and the office. I felt this wave of energy behind me. It's a palpable energy. It's almost like you're sitting in a pool and a bunch of people get into the pool and the wave of the water rolls over and passes over you.
Oh, so you really felt kind of like a wave or something passing.
Right. I felt the wave. It wasn't a wind. It was an energy, and it passed through me. And so I spin my chair around, and I see there's a portal in space.
You mean like in Sliders, that TV series?
I guess it's something like that, inside, like a cloud, okay. a luminous cloud that large enough for three people.
What color?
The cloud would have been whitish.
Okay. Was it moving?
Again, I can see this in my third eye. So this is not...
Oh, so this is all kind of like you're feeling it, like when someone stares at you and you turn around and they're staring at you.
Right, it's like you see somebody in your peripheral vision.
Okay.
So you're not getting direct eyesight, naked eyesight, but you can see them as long as you focus. This is kind of like second sight. If you focus using your third eye, you can see...
This is not going through your mind when you're spinning around. You just say, what the hell's going on?
No, this is me explaining something that really happened. It's happening live, real time. Seconds, you know, look like years and decades, because there's a portal opened up in my room. Again, I have never had these experiences before. I do not believe in UFOs. I don't chase ETs. I was never one of those people. I had no interest in it. I didn't even watch ET the Extraterrestrial, which was a big Steven Spielberg film.
Mm-hmm.
I never watched the first Star Wars until it was re-released in 1997. I had no interest in space.
Okay, so when you spun around and you sensed something going on, did you know it was a portal? Was that the word? Oh, that's a portal.
I had no. It's just like falling in love. It just overwhelms you. There's a portal. It did not feel evil.
No. How did you know it was a portal? Portal, doorway, connection to someplace else.
Because the energy of the room, it's like the vibration of the room went up.
But Paris, this is really important. If you spun around and saw something bizarre, and it was bizarre but you didn't know what it was, but you said you turned around and there was a portal, did you know at that moment it was a portal? Did you know what a portal was? Because if you did, that presupposes a whole bunch of other stuff that's been suppressed in you.
I understood it, but it was not part of my vernacular.
Okay, but when you saw this thing, you said, I know what that is, even if you didn't get it.
I understand it.
Oh, see, that's crucial to this whole story, because that then gives credibility to the idea that there's a part of us, using you as the metaphor, that has this information already somewhere in us, and we're rejecting and constantly suppressing it. So when you're confronted with a bizarre phenomenon that most people would say, good God, what is that thing? You think in your mind it's a portal, even though you don't express it. You know it's a connection to somewhere else, meaning you have a database of information that you're not tapping into at that moment that you then subsequently did.
Right. I had some understanding of it in one place in my consciousness, and another place in my consciousness I had no understanding of it, and there was this firewall that for some reason some bits of information were slipping through the firewall, connecting that dormant part of my brain to that part of my brain that understands this stuff.
This is so important, because this process you're describing is the process of getting in touch with who you really are, that apparently up until that point was so suppressed that you only had flickers. But when you're confronted by something so bizarre that it should not be there, your instinct is, oh, I know what that is, even though you're fighting internally to not know what that is.
That's right. That's right. There's two people. There's two people. One person understands it. The other person wants to run away and call somebody.
Oh, my. And I'm under the bed like it used to be. Oh, it's all fine. It'll be all fine. It'll go away.
Right.
It'll all go back to normal. It'll be normal.
And who, you know, who wins that fight is it's what determines your experience. And for me, I believe so strongly, I trusted that other part of me for some reason, that I stuck to it and I didn't run and hide under my bed, which is what most people do. They will run away. They will scream. They will start praying. They will pull out books of scripture.
So the block or the impervious wall or whatever firewall you want to term it was so secure in you that these guys had to come back, you say, three or four nights before you actually, wait a minute, this is really going on.
And that's what happened, because I was like a normal person. I had this experience. They came in. There was a communication. I felt them. I saw them. I heard them. I felt the energy. I saw the portal open, and they left. They stepped through the portal, space-time. I saw all of this the first night, and then I remember I turn around back to my computer, and I forgot it all.
Amazing.
Just because I went back to the other side of that consciousness, that hypnosis.
within your mind, your own mind.
Right. Back to that hypnotic state that I've been, that Pavlovian state of thinking, which is do not think outside of this boundary. You're not allowed. It's not a good idea. You'll be ostracized. You'll be called names. You won't be able to do this. You won't be able to do that. You might get hurt. You might get harmed. So I went, I immediately, almost within the hour, I had completely forgotten about this thing. I thought it was just interesting. I said to myself, that was interesting. And then I said, but not important. But not important.
Well, looked at from now, that's an astonishing reaction.
So you have to think that, so a normal person might have, you know, they might see a UFO, nothing compared to what I had. They're not going to change their life. They're not going to believe in interstellar beings because we revert back to the hypnotic state.
Mm-hmm. So what happened next? After they visit you two or three nights, it finally dawns on you what?
So that after three nights, they came back three times, and each time I felt them, I would see the portal even more clearly. I would see the whole process. I would see three people stepping into this cloud, this luminous cloud, and then disappearing, and you can feel the vibration of the room drop. Even before I understood what vibration and frequency meant, this is 10 years ago.
Right.
I didn't understand all that, but I was feeling it. I was processing it. After three times, I still wanted to go back and say, that was interesting, but I have other things to do with my life. I was doing whatever I was doing. I said, well, this is interesting, but what am I supposed to do with it? And the answer was nothing. And then a strange thing happened.
The answer from you inside or the answer from them?
From me.
Ah, so again, you're trying to ignore.
That's right. I am rejecting what is being thrown into my face.
Boy, you're a hard case, Ferris. How come you're on this show tonight? What happened next? Because we got to move a little faster.
Okay.
What was the revelation that made you go, holy cow, they're guys from out there?
So then they asked me to do something, and in order to do that, I had to go see a psychic intuitive woman to help me to reconnect those two parts of my consciousness.
So wait a minute. They asked you to do something, or they asked you to go and see a specific psychic for this kind of mental surgery?
Well, they asked me to do – they wanted to talk with me more, and they said they couldn't talk to me because there's something in me that's
not. Oh, because of the programming.
Right. They couldn't communicate with me. So then I needed to remedy this situation, and then I was at a health food store. I saw a brochure on the wall, and I went to this psychic intuitive in downtown Vancouver, and I said, you are the one who can help me. And she said, well, I can't help you. I don't do ETs, because I said ETs. I got these ETs. They want me to talk to them, and I don't know what's going on. Can you help me? She says, I don't do ETs. Yeah, go find somebody else. So then I had
talk about a lack of curiosity. I mean, seriously, folks. Guy walks into a bar and says, I'm talking to three ETs, and the woman says, oh, go find somebody else. I'm not interested.
Yeah, she said. And so what happened was that I have some intuitive function, and I said to her, she said, how can I help you? And in an email, I said, well, you can help me because you can do an energy healing on me, and that will be enough to remedy the situation. And then she wrote back in an email.
How did you know this?
Intuition.
Or did they tell you?
Well, I don't recall being told. It was kind of an intuitive, it was an insight.
Okay. So in other words, part of you, the real you, is bubbling to try to get through this barrier, and it's sending you little emergency messages like, do this, this will help.
Well, what probably was happening is that the other side of me is trying to help
That's just what I said. Yes, right. Yes, that's exactly what I thought I just said.
But it's not overt. It's not.
No, it's all explicit. You have to interpret your own cues. Good grief, Paris. It's like you're in the Matrix. You're trying to get out of the Matrix. You're trying to extricate yourself from the damn light bulb.
And it's very difficult because I had nobody to motivate me, nobody to help me.
Well, except for three interdimensional guys. Come on, you keep putting them down. You know, they're kind of a major part of the story.
I really did not want to go there. It's just something kept saying, do not go there.
Okay.
But something else was saying, come here.
This is going to make a hell of a movie. Okay, continue, please.
So I went to I said to this lady, there's an energy healing you can do. And she wrote back, she says, come to my office on this date. We'll do it. It'll cost you $100.
Okay.
So I went to her office. I took the last $100 I had because I didn't have much money.
Wait. For someone who's not motivated to crack this barrier, that's a pretty risky thing to do. Obviously, part of you really wanted to know.
They really want to know, but I did not want to know. That dormant hypnotic person.
So how'd you wind up spending the $100? If that dormant hypnotic person is running your life, how did you wind up spending the $100?
Because I trusted that inner self.
So you took a leap of faith.
Right. I jumped off the fence and I said, okay, let's figure this out. I'll talk to these people and then we'll be done. I'll go back to my life. That's the logic. I don't want to do this. I don't care about aliens. I don't care about extraterrestrials.
Boy, I have heard of conflicted personalities, but this takes the cake.
But this is the structure that's been implanted in everybody's.
You think it's in everybody?
Everybody.
See, if this is true, Paris, it would explain a lot of stuff. I mean, I gave the first Star Trek presentation connecting Star Trek and reality back in the 70s at, I think it was the second Star Trek convention there in New York at the old Commodore Hotel. Mm-hmm. And I had to follow, Spock on stage. Nimoy. I had to follow Nimoy. There's 5,000 people in this audience all screaming for Leonard, right?
Right.
I come on stage, they all leave. I mean, that's really kind of that shows you have a big ego or a self-sustaining ego if you can walk on stage and watch 5,000 people leave as you're about to begin. And then they came back. That was what's so interesting, because what I was trying to tell them is there's a real universe that the Star Trek universe can connect us to, and we can do, ultimately, all these things we are seeing, we can do that, and I laid out as my NASA consultancy and all that, and being with Cronkite, And what I found, Paris, is that they did not care.
That's right.
They did not care, and I was stunned that they did not want to make their fantasy reality, and that's when I began to develop my own theory about programming. And now, of course, I've had decades of looking at people not wanting to look at uncomfortable things like ruins all over the solar system that obviously we're not the first and we're not the brightest and we're kind of very, 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 very low on a primitive scale of civilizations and we're surrounded by incredible ruins and knowledge and all that. And everybody, including the agency, does not apparently want to know this. Otherwise, all the imagery, all the photographs, all the data that we presented in our imaging panels here on the show alone would have gone viral, and the world would be totally different. The only way I can explain that, Paris, is with your model that most of us do not want to know, period.
And that has been purposely inserted into the consciousness and the subconsciousness.
So the reason you're on the show is to show us tonight how we break the programming and how all these people that desperately would like to think maybe what we're talking about could be real, they can cross the Rubicon and actually look at the evidence without their internal programmer saying, it's nonsense, it's crazy, it's nonsense.
When it comes to sensitive information, supernatural information, exotic information, a lot of people are sitting on the fence. They're literally sitting on the fence. I don't want to believe it because, but at the same time, the normal life is kind of boring. I kind of like to sit here and just do nothing. And the truth is, your life doesn't change until you get off the fence, until you take that next step, until you start speaking, until you start writing, until you start accepting the reality. See, because people say, well, aliens might be real. It's possibly true, but I'm not going to go there. I'm not going to figure it out. I'm not going to change my life, and I have no interest in it because I have better things to do. I need to go to work. I need to raise a family. I have my addictions I have to take care of. And everything else I need to do, why should I do it? And your life doesn't change until you say, I believe in extraterrestrials, and I'd like to know more. I'd like to talk about it. And that step is a huge step because you have to break that firewall.
So how long did it take you before you actually realized what was going on with you?
Well, so I went to see this woman, and she said, the only reason I am seeing you is because you told me I can do an energy healing. And she said, I have never advertised I can do energy healing. I have never told anybody I can do an energy healing. And I've only done it in my immediate family. And you're not supposed to know that.
Oh. How did you find this woman? I forgot to ask.
There was a brochure on a wall in
it was kind of like a synchronicity, but you focused on that person on the wall at that time because you needed someone like that, and that was the person you turned your attention to.
Exactly. I was looking for a person, and that person showed up. And she said she doesn't even advertise. She said that's the only place she ever put a brochure.
Well, this is kind of synchronistic.
So I found the only brochure. I found the only woman who can help me. I told her something that nobody's supposed to know.
Okay, let me ask you this. Do you now know how that works?
How do you
explain that, finding the right person at the right time?
This is all has to do with the nature of reality and tapping into the consciousness, into the matrix, you can say. But it's a kind of a thought grid. We can tap into a thought grid.
What I'm getting at is, to me, it looks like when you got yourself out of the way, the part of you that didn't want to have anything to do with this, the part of you that wanted to know, that wanted to reconnect, that wanted to be a real person again, that person has all these attributes. That's the real you, and the shut me down you is kind of like the controlled hypnotic post-suggestion, don't be curious, don't look.
That's right.
So the real you was able to connect and create this synchronicity, which really was part of a plan to get you back on track, if I'm reading this correctly.
That's right. There's a higher plan. There's a schedule for your life. There's a plan for your life, which is planned before you enter the life, which then you then forget. As part of the process, you forget.
I always hate that part.
This runs into a number of issues because the idea was you incarnate into this human experience.
Okay, before we get to the big picture stuff, I want to go back to metonymically. Let's follow what these guys said to you and what happened as you woke up to this new reality.
So I should be very forthright in saying I did not want to wake up, and I kept finding every reason to just let's figure this out, and then I can go back to what I was doing before, which was basically nothing.
So you rationalized, even as you were going through the motions of finding a healer, et cetera, you're rationalizing, well, this will all be temporary, and then I'll go back to my normal life.
Exactly. I want to get this done. It's something bothering me. And again, I didn't have anything very important in my life. I still wanted to go back to that unimportant life.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to the lady, and she did an energy healing, and I had these vivid dreams.
So this was in person. This is not over the phone or over Skype. This is person to person.
No, that's right. I went into her office. She had an office, and she sat with me, and she did no touching. It was just energy, using her hands and energy. And I closed my eyes, and I felt myself flying through the air. I felt myself in space. I saw myself on Mars. I saw all kinds of very powerful things. I saw a giant a Buddha, a giant golden Buddha floating in space near Mars. You know, I saw all kinds of stuff. And I said to myself, it's just a dream. It doesn't mean anything. And I came back. I woke up. It was about an hour and a half later.
So did she put you under hypnotically?
No, she just did energy, but the energy changed my vibration, so I did go into a kind of a
trance,
a meditative state, yeah.
Okay.
By energy alone, just energy.
Okay.
So that's her energy and my energy interacting. She wasn't putting energy. She was just raising, and she was just manipulating my energy. The body aura and the frequency of the body.
And obviously releasing some amazing memories.
So, So I was kind of half asleep, right? I was in this meditative state. And during about midway, I felt her, she was running around the room like she was like chasing something or running from something. And then she left the room. And so I just tried to just focus on my dream. And then she'd come back, and then she'd be running around, and then she'd leave again. And then when she came back, and then I woke up, it was over, I said, you know, what's going on? Was something wrong? Why were you leaving? And she said, well, I don't know how to tell you this, but I saw 6 extraterrestrials come into the room, and they started asking me questions a mile a minute. They were speaking to me so fast, I was overwhelmed and I couldn't handle it. I had to leave.
Oh, my. So let me see if I can get what's going on here. You're lying on the couch. You're in some kind of a trance. You're working on yourself. And in that process, the guys that wanted you to do this procedure so they could talk to you are so eager, so fascinated that now they can talk to you, that they don't wait. They leap right in while she's still working on you.
They leaped 6 of them. The way she described it, they were gray-skinned with black pupils, what a lot of people think of the grays, but they're a little bit different.
Okay.
But they were short-statured.
Now, these were not like the guys that came to your room the first time or the second time.
No, just completely different.
Different species. And there's 6 of them.
6 of them, and they...
Impulse control.
They spoke to her using telepathy. She said they spoke very fast.
So they really, 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 really wanted to talk to you.
They have a lot to say, and she saw them. There's not just me now. So now I've seen 3 of these interdimensional beings, which I can try to rationalize and justify and explain. And now she sees 6 ETs.
I'll see your 3 and I'll raise you 3.
So now we got 9.
Okay, this is getting pretty... Oh, let's hold it there, because we're at the top of the hour. We got a station break coming up. My favorite NBC tones, KCAA. You're on the other side of midnight. My guest this morning, Paris Tosin, and he's taking us through his first and second and third encounters with ETs, family maybe. Then he has to go to a hypnotherapist to try to get his mind straightened out so he can actually talk to them and not keep telling himself, well, they're not real, it's not important, it's not interesting, it's not anything... We'll get back to all this on the other side of midnight. My name is Richard C. Hoagland, and yeah, we're going to return. Don't go away. And we are back on the other side of midnight. My guest this morning, Paris Tosin, has just told us something kind of intriguing. While he's trying to get his act together internally and stop fighting with himself so he can actually see and talk to ETs, his hypnotherapist sees 6 of them as she's in the process of trying to unravel him so he can see them and talk to them, or normally kind of himself. Please continue.
So now we're at this place where I have a witness. So that's she's saying now to me, to subconsciously, she's saying, I'm not crazy. There's something going on, and something that has not been expressed in the normal world.
No, wait, she's saying that to you?
No, she's saying that to me subconsciously, because all of these experiences are now becoming more validated, and it's becoming more complicated, and I have now a witness.
Mm. And now you have, what, 9 ETs running around in your rooms?
So now there's 9 ETs. The point is that neither NASA nor SETI nor the American government nor any government has ever come out and said that these things exist.
Okay.
In fact, they've said the extraterrestrials do not exist, we have never been visited, and we have never had any negotiations with extraterrestrials. I have 9 extraterrestrials that suggest otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
And now I have to rationalize the normal structured world, the hypnosis, and this ultra reality, which is being inserted into my life. It's being suggested to me with a very forceful advance. And after...
Hang on, because we only got about a couple of minutes till the first break here. if you went to her with the idea that you would be cleared somehow so you could communicate, there obviously was a part of you saying, wait a minute, this can't be real. I mean, yeah, they appear three times in your room, but you're still denying it because I'm going to get back to my normal life, I'm, you know, et cetera. When she tells you she's seen six more in that session, how did that make you feel?
I felt like something is ending. My life is going to end.
Oh. And so in other words, the reality comes rushing in, and you basically say, I can't go back to my normal life because I don't have a normal life. Damn it, there's three ETs in my room.
That's right. It's like the doctor saying, you know, Mr. Tosin, there's this thing in your body, and these are your options.
Okay.
So you either accept that diagnosis, or you reject it until something even more forceful comes along to wake you up. So I had to decide what to do with it, and over the course of the next couple of months, I decided I'm going to figure this out.
Hmm.
But during those 2 months, that's when I began to have a lot of attacks from the other forces that don't want me to find out. Because there are forces that do not want you to wake up. Even if you have mostly woken, they want to put you back to sleep.
Okay, let me get this clear. In addition to human government types that basically want everything to stay the same, you're saying that when you're having this internal war about waking up, there's other beings that are trying to keep you asleep beyond human entities, beyond human government, beyond human mind control or media programming or whatever. There's actually other intelligent entities trying to lull you back into your dreamlike trance?
That's right. If you manage to escape the hypnosis and the programming, there's another layer that's going to put you to sleep. And these are other interdimensional forces, dark spirits, magicians, and other supernatural entities that can recognize you when you are awake, and they know how to attack your energy signature so that you go back into the hypnotic trance.
This sounds like a very complicated, and I'm obviously using the wrong analogy here, very expensive program to keep us down on the farm.
Yes.
Hang on. We'll get back to it in 3 minutes. You're on the other side of midnight. Don't go away, we shall return. And we are back. Paris, this has got to be one of the more intriguing stories I've encountered personally. And I can't wait to see what happens next, but since we only have a little less than an hour, we got to kind of collapse some of this. At what point in this process did you decide to take control? At what point did you have the aha we talked about earlier where you said, oh my God, this is real? And what did they tell you that made you realize that there's an awful lot we don't know and we're kept from knowing?
Well, the most vivid experience happened in March of 2006. So in, you know, December 2005, I woke up. I went through a couple of months of turmoil. And finally, I decided in March of 2006, I said, okay, I believe this stuff. I'm going to understand it. I'm going to pursue it. I'm going to move in this direction. Very clearly, I remember saying that. And within a few days after that, I found a UFO group called UFO Facts, headed by Dr. Richard Boylan.
Hmm.
And so I was kind of, again, I was kind of intuitively led here, and this was a good place to go. And now I trusted these advisors. Again, there's a lot of information coming at me, and there's a lot of forces against it. And I remember I wanted to sign up to be a member of the group. And then I had this, you know, these kind of attacks, these panic attacks and this negativity. And then I held off for a week. And then finally I got the strength to say, okay, I'm going to try it again. And I signed up and I said, hi, my name. And I am a star being. That was my first, one of my first comments.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the more intelligent members of the group connected to the interstellar cultures, they said, well, welcome, we welcome you. They were very respectful.
Yeah, Boylan is very big on star cultures.
Boylan was very big, and he stayed away from the disinformation, and he was working with a very genuine group under Star Nations. And I had some of the members of Star Nations were well connected with me, so there was this symmetry there.
So how much time elapsed between your appearances, the guys coming into your room through the wall, and your getting yourself corrected internally so you could see and experience and communicate? How long between those events and joining Boylan's group?
So mid-November was the three interdimensional visits, and then mid-March of the next year.
Oh, so it was spring of next year. Okay.
So 4 months. Four very intense months.
I can imagine.
Which were so intense, I actually wrote a journal. I documented stuff that I was seeing and feeling, everything. And So you asked me what changed things, and this is what changed things. And this is, again, I am rejecting this as much as possible. I am, because everything tells me that this is not supposed to exist. So what happened is, after I joined Boylan's group, a week later, my apartment, about 11:30 at night, I felt the entire apartment turn into like some kind of electromagnetic fire. My body was burning up on fire. I couldn't sit down. I couldn't stand up. I was literally burning from the inside out. And I went to the kitchen. I was like, the whole room, the whole apartment wasn't on fire and flames, but it was like this electromagnetic energy that it wasn't just palpable. It was damaging.
Did you try leaving the house or the apartment?
So I left the house and I still felt it on me.
So it was you.
I went down the street. Well, now that I felt something beaming this stuff on me, no matter where I went.
Following you.
It was following me.
Okay.
Again, this happens after a lot of stuff has already happened. And so I said to myself, well,
wait. You say a lot of stuff. Don't leave us with ellipses. This is really difficult to grasp, Paris. Come on. Listen to what you're telling us. So take us slowly through the parts where we need to understand this transition.
I had gone through the 2 or 3 months of coming to terms with this new reality.
The three guys. You know,
the three guys, the six gray-skinned beings, the connection to different entities. After I was with this intuitive lady, then I met more of these star beings.
How do you know?
Because I would see them. They would appear.
Well, please describe. You're walking down the street and suddenly you're joined by people.
Well, in my apartment, they would appear, or in my dreams, they would appear in astral form. They would appear. And it was just like when I was with that lady, when she did the energy healing.
Mm-hmm.
So that all of a sudden the energy healing became a platform which I could understand and interpolate this new information. And the star beings understood that. So they kind of used that same metaphor. Say, well, if we come into this kind of dream state, which you're familiar with and you trust because you had somebody else there with you.
Right.
Then we will be able to communicate with you at this level.
So this is a very high barrier, and they're trying desperately, and you're a really tough cookie, because other than the final few things you've done, you've been an impenetrable wall, and now there has to be structures to where they slip through the wall, almost like tunneling, quantum tunneling.
Right, exactly.
So they can reach you in your dreams, in modalities that are familiar, and they're obviously wanting to talk to you. What did they start saying?
They started telling me things of my past, who I was in the past.
You mean previous lives?
Previous lives. again, I've never studied previous lives. I wasn't against reincarnation, but the discussion on previous lives expects you to accept the notion that reincarnation is real.
Well, wait. You can have, scenarios. You can posit this model, that model. You don't have to believe in it. You can just create what's called a logically, internally consistent model that makes predictions, and then you compare predictions against reality. When you say they put you in touch with past lives, is that implying that they have been in touch with you, the core you, whoever you are, through multiple incarnations and multiple lives over a very long period of time?
Well, right. All of this starts coming out that I've been here multiple lives, I've reincarnated, but we're dealing with in the context of a star being. It's not a human being incarnating, reincarnating.
And how are you defining the difference between the two?
So a star being is an off-planet being, is a non-human, has stellar genes. They have different shapes, different texture, they don't look human in my case.
Okay, now we're talking about a range of species, right?
That's right.
What about the humanoids, the ones that look like, Michael Rennie and The Day the Earth Stood Still? You've met them, right?
Right. So
are they aliens or are they family? In other words, genetically, are they related to us, but they just happen to hang their hat 15 light years away?
So what happens is that
you didn't answer my question.
Well, I have to kind of go around.
No, you don't.
About
no,
this.
Just answer my question. Are there humans out there that are genetically us?
Yes.
Okay.
And there are star beings that appear as human,
but are not genetically related.
Are more distant. They're more distant related.
Oh, so they are related, but it's like third and 15th cousins, fourth removed, that kind of thing.
Right. The more advanced species have a more distant relationship.
Paris, do you understand what you're saying? Because my model on this program in the last 30 years of my life has been the human race is part of an incredibly extended family, an interstellar family, some of whom are so human that you wouldn't even notice them as you pass them, others more removed, just like you said. And that information has been vigorously and religiously and catastrophically withheld from us, because if we knew that we were not alone, we're part of a huge family, everything here would change.
Everything should change.
Well, that's separate. Forget the should. It's just the science is this will happen if that happens, if that happens. So when people become aware of this, that will change everything. So people somewhere behind the scenes, there's an awful lot of effort, apparently, Paris, devoted to keeping all of us from ever knowing this, not only on this planet, but upstairs, interdimensionally, extra planet-wise. There's a huge cadre trying to keep us down on the farm. Alex Jones calls this the prison planet. Are we the prison planet?
We are the hypnotized planet.
But why? What's the purpose? What's the objective? Who is afraid of us so deeply that they have to keep us almost unconscious to allow us to exist and just blow the planet away and we're gone? We're history. We're toast. We're no longer a problem. Who are we a problem to that they have to keep us alive but keep us asleep?
That goes to the control races that don't want the human species to realize that they are descendants of these off-planet beings.
Ah.
The Earth is like, when you get more powerful star beings and you get more technologically advanced, you don't build nations, you build planets. And then you build a planet and then you populate the planet, you colonize the planet because you have advanced technology, you can do genetic engineering. And then when a planet has been colonized, a planet can be sold to other buyers, interstellar buyers, just like a nation or a corporation.
No, wait. You're saying that in this incredibly advanced set of interstellar cultures, it's viewed as permissible to buy and sell other conscious beings? Doesn't sound like advanced cultures to me.
Planetary
ecosystems. Who the hell are you talking to, Paris?
Planetary ecosystems can be bought and sold, not in the way, the human way, but to simplify it, they can be bought and sold, and the buyer will take care of that planet. They will. In other words, it's like a maintenance crew, right? You purchase this corporation.
Wait. You're talking about gardening. You're talking about gardeners protecting environments of planets, and each having their own little garden to play with.
I'm talking about because the human model is a smaller scale model. So we have apartment buildings.
Okay.
So you live in an apartment building. You own your apartment. You live in your own little world. You have a two-bedroom, a three-bedroom, whatever you want. You raise your family. But the apartment building is owned by somebody. And the agreement is that the landlord, the owners, the real estate owners, the moguls, they take care of the building so that you can live a prosperous life. That's the agreement. The agreement is, if the owners take care of the apartment building, they take care of the landscaping.
Right.
And they maintain the building, they do all the plumbing, and then that's accepted.
Mm-hmm.
You don't own the apartment building you live in.
Right.
So if that doesn't work, then you try to get rid of the owner, you take legal action against the owner, you revolt against the owner. Now, that's the human scale. Again, when you talk about an interplanetary being, an interstellar being, these are huge scales. We have to increase the scale.
Are we talking beings or civilizations?
So now we're talking, right, civilizations, and that they own planets that they manage.
Okay, are we talking individuals own planets or star systems or civilizations?
Well, the more advanced the civilization, so there's the corporate, there's the real estate company, there's this district, that district. There in those districts there are apartment buildings.
See, there's something about this model that bothers me intensely. I'll tell you why. You just revealed in the last hour that three guys from some other dimension ported into your bedroom, transported, teleported, whatever, and then left. If that science is true, then the idea of ownership, of payment, of want, of scarcity, of limitations, limited resources, if you have access to interdimensionality, you can transport or make or create anything in any color, in any form, at any time, anywhere in the universe. You don't need money. You don't need to buy things. You don't need to own things. So this whole idea seems very clunky and human, which in some level almost makes me believeless of our abilities.
The human model of this unlimited universe, this do anything you want, is part of the hypnotic conditioning.
Oh, really? I think it was part of the physics. No, I've been working on physics that lets us do this.
There's no difference. There's no better life, is the way I like to put it. There's no better life in the world than if you live a rich life or a poor life. It's the same. You're dealing with the same things between people are people no matter where you go. It's just the scale. It's the level of technology. It's the level of engagement. Instead of me developing an apartment complex, right? Mm-hmm. Like Donald Trump. I build an apartment complex. I line it. I do the decor. It's beautiful. The location's great. It's got pools. It's by the lake. That's my creative passion. Mm-hmm. And then certain kinds of people go to that apartment because they have certain money. They want a certain lifestyle. Whatever demographic I've created, right? I've attracted these buyers. So now we step back and we go to the interstellar community. They're much more advanced. They don't build apartment buildings.
When you say advanced, you mean technologically?
Technologically. They build apartments.
Are they spiritually? Are they consciously more advanced? It sounds to me that
No, they're consciously. Consciously more advanced.
They are.
Right.
So why do they want to own other people?
They don't own. They create a habitable living space for other life forms to exist. Why do you
hang on. And then they mold and they shape and they program and they mind control the beings in that environment, if I'm reading you correctly.
No, we have to back up. That the depends on the owner. So the builder is, there's a builder. So there's Donald Trump. He builds the apartment and then he might send out the management to another company.
Okay.
That management company might be good, might be bad.
But see, again, you're limiting out very human institutions that are built on 19th century limitations of basically steampunk technology. If we're dealing with really advanced technologies, based on the sciences that I and my colleagues have been looking at for decades now, that we know are real, we know can create, release unlimited energy and never have to burn another, you know, faggot of coal or charcoal again, or push.
What do you do with that, Richard? What do you do with all that power and energy?
You don't own other people with it, and that's what you're telling me. This incredible interstellar multiple culture basically winds up owning planets and conscious beings on those planets.
They build planets so that people can live there and they can enjoy and live.
And then you're telling me that
they don't own the planet.
Then how did we become owned? Charles Fort. Does the name Charles Fort mean anything to you?
No.
Okay, look up, Google Charles Fort. Charles Fort wrote several books back in the early part of the 20th century. One was called The Book of the Damned. And in it, he recounts all kinds of extraordinary, exotic, anomalous phenomenon, kind of like a reader's collage of, you know, the best of Art Bell. Yeah. And at the end of the book, he basically says, my conclusion based on all this is we are property. He did this decades ago, Paris. Now, if we're property, the guys who own us are not very advanced. So we're having a big fight down here right now. Okay,
let me use the analogy of the apartment building. Does the landlord own you? You own an apartment in an apartment
complex.
No.
As long as I live in that apartment building,
the landlord?
No, but he controls my life, which in essence is like owning you. All right?
But that's it. You can leave.
And go where?
Nobody's forcing you to stay in the apartment.
Can 7 billion people leave this planet tomorrow? No.
Okay, if you leave, you live in an apartment, you leave the apartment, you could live in another apartment.
Paris, you're not going to move 7 billion people off this planet. The analogy breaks down.
No, so, the analogy is you're not owned. It's an agreement. Agreement, I will live here.
Wait a minute. You just entered a new concept. What
agreement? There's an agreement.
When does a human race make an agreement with the owners of Earth?
Why do you live in the United States of America?
Because I happened to be born here.
Does President Obama own you?
Well, he determines major parameters of my life as long as I'm in the United States under the laws,
he owns you.
Under the Constitution.
Obama owns you.
No, but you see, the difference is I don't have the freedom of leaving the Earth. Neither does anybody else yet.
Do you have the freedom of leaving the United States?
No, but we're talking about, forget the analogy. Let's go back to your interstellar civilizations.
You stay in the United States.
Hang on. If they parse out star systems and individual planets in star systems or even star systems are owned, meaning they are controlled, their destiny is prescribed, the owner can do whatever they want with them.
No, there is an agreement.
When does the agreement get made?
It gets made in the building of a planet.
Well, I tell you what.
You need to house people in the universe. They live on planets.
Hold on. You know, we only got a couple of minutes till the bottom of the hour. I want to explore more of this in some great depth. We're going to be joined by one of our friends from outside of Tokyo this morning. Michelle is joining us. And we've got literally about 10 seconds, I'm sorry, till the end of this break. So let's hold all this. Hang on. Let's just hold everything there. I want to kind of context this because, as I understand it, you're saying that there are interstellar cultures that literally own systems and planets, and forget the building part. They own them. How they get there is a secondary problem. And then they are populated by conscious beings, but the conscious beings, in our case, have been ruthlessly suppressed, screwed, upended, and lied to perennially, besides being killed in millions and millions and millions of wars that never need to have happen. And under the morality of our interstellar overlords, this is, quote, fine? Let's find out. When we come back on the other side of midnight, we shall return. And we are back. You know, this is so intriguing. This is absolutely so intriguing because the idea that we're not alone, to me, is copacetic. I mean, we've got tons of data, millions of frames of data showing that obviously we're not alone. There's stuff out there. Somebody built it. Interesting question. We've talked about this hypothetical type 2 civilization that at some point in the past of this solar system basically came here, looked around, said, okay, this is not suitable for life. They rearranged a lot of stuff, placed the Earth where it is, right distance, Mars, etc., you know, created this system, small planets in, big planets out, really mysterious stuff way out there, Pluto, Kuiper Belt, beyond the now the planet 9 and all that. And then they set it in motion as a kind of a school or an academy or an environment, a petri dish, where consciousness could evolve and figure out who it was. What Paris is telling us tonight is eerily parallel to what we have figured out from looking at the data, looking at the ruins, looking at the evidence of who was here before. Where I have a break is it in fact as corporate as making it sound, so that when they create a planet and a star system, he says you can move, but how do you move unless we're looking at multiple incarnations and you decide before you're born you're going to go here, you're going to go there, which of course raises a huge set of other questions. In the meantime, Michelle, all the way from Japan, is with us. Good morning.
Good morning. So I wanted to kind of add an extra question onto this, layer it in, I guess. Irregardless of this question of whether or not we are owned by our landlords, which I think is a valid question, my question is, if we are essentially on this planet as tenants, what is our rent? What are we paying in rent? Mm. What is it they get out of us?
Excellent question. Paris?
That's a very good and a very complicated question.
I assumed it would be.
We have 25 minutes. Go for it.
We are dealing with a very multi-layered, advanced concept, and we're going to try to summarize it in a very short period of time.
And for if you can call slavery an advanced concept, I mean, let's cut to the chase. You're talking about slavery.
So what I'm talking about is that a planetary system was built, a habitable planet was built, and it was colonized by people from other parts of the universe who are human-looking. In other words, the human genome is not does not come from Earth. The human race is not an indigenous species. So they came from other planets because they heard, hey, there's a great place to live. It's got a lot of green trees and fresh water. Who wants to go? And just
I thought you said these guys create planets.
So there's a race that will build the star system. There's a race that builds the planets, and then there are people who entice the colonists to migrate to these new planets.
Okay, then let's go back to Michelle's question. What's in it for all those folks to do all this, and we show up? What do we pay them in return?
The idea is for you to, it is a school that is for you to spiritually grow, and then you move on to another planet, another star system. So the idea is you come here for a particular experience, which is actually well laid out. You have that experience, you gain your spiritual knowledge, your enlightenment, you enter a new phase of evolutionary existence to go higher up in the civilization scale.
Mm-hmm.
So you start at the bottom, and through the spiritual progression, you move on to the next star system, the next galaxy. You have this perpetual reincarnation of the soul. So that is
and
why
presumably
we
you're
came
getting
here.
And presumably you're getting older and wiser and smarter, and you're learning to be more in touch with yourself, and you're learning more humanity and empathy and all that good stuff. Again, why doesn't this just happen in the universe naturally? Why do we have guys running around recreating star systems to basically have cattle?
Somebody has to, you can't build an apartment building. You need
forget building. You know,
you need somebody to build a planet.
You
need somebody to maintain the planet. You need somebody to service the planet. You can't do it then.
Did your guys talk to you about the whole sweep of the universe, billions of years? The very beginning, where we are now, where the distant future, that kind of thing?
Yes and no. That's a very complicated discussion.
Okay, well, go ahead, Michelle.
So to Michelle's question, Michelle's got a very good question. And what's happened is 5,000 years ago, this planet was hijacked by a very dark, controlling race reptilian in nature. And they decided to usurp the energy of the humans. They decided to change the control structures. They decided to abuse the laws. They decided to torture mankind because they draw energy and strength from the misery of human beings.
Okay, hold on. If we're dealing with advanced interstellar cultures in this galaxy, in a million galaxies, however large this consciousness bubble extends, why don't the police arrive? Why are these beings allowed to enslave other beings and get away with it scot-free? I don't see anybody showing up, you know, to put them in chains and haul them off to the hoosegow.
Because the star beings, they uphold a very high level of cosmic laws, something like non-interference. So they can interfere. They can intervene.
No, wait. The guys who own us now have interfered. You said 5,000 years ago, they interfered like crazy. I mean, there are no cops. There are no good guys.
The good guys follow the laws, and the bad guys, they abuse the laws.
And well, nobody enforces the law.
I was going to say, where's the enforcement?
Well, we're still here. We're still here. This planet shouldn't be here.
This actually reminds me of two things from science fiction. One is the classic Doctor Who series, because in the classic Doctor Who series, the Time Lords, other than the Doctor, have this strict code of non-interference that even if, you know, the Daleks are running around destroying and subjugating planets, they will not interfere. And really only the Doctor interferes, and he actually was put on trial for it at one point because it's considered breaking their code of non-interference. And it sounds like that in a way.
Exactly.
But also, yeah. Which... Don't get me wrong. I think that's actually probably somewhat wrong on the Time Lord's part, if you look at least in the way they framed it in the story. Mm-hmm. But also, this reminds me a lot of, at least before the subjugation part, this reminds me a lot of Douglas Adams in his Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Yes, doesn't it?
In which the universe was built by, you know, designed by Slotty Bartfuss or whatever his name was, and it was essentially a giant computer simulation to try and help them figure out the meaning of the universe, and it just happened to get blown up at the wrong moment.
No, they don't have to figure out the universe.
Wait a minute, I thought the mice had it destroyed because it was in the way of an off-ramp for an interstellar freeway or something.
No, the mice were the ones that were supposed to be protecting it.
Oh.
And the freeway people had no idea.
Oh, I thought they were
just,
I thought
they
were the messengers. Okay. So back to the question, because advanced beings do not own other advanced beings.
Well, I have never said that anybody is owned, but...
You may not say it, but that's the reality. It's like when you don't call radical Islamic terrorists, it doesn't make it any difference because the name doesn't matter. They're going to do what they're going to do. These civilizations...
You cannot be owned unless you want to be owned.
But then you're saying there is a prior agreement before you are incarnated into this 3D reality. Every single being on this planet, all 7 billion people, most of whom live in abject poverty and horror and terror of even survival, even in the 21st century, they volunteered to come here and go through this because of what?
Of an adventure.
A what?
An adventure.
Well, that reminds me of something my old friend Gene Roddenberry said.
Do you realize that some people on this earth, they will pay thousands of dollars to go to the deepest, darkest parts of the world, to hike across through jungle and climb the most dangerous mountains ever known? They pay for that. They train for that. But normal people don't do that.
Yeah,
so
but wait.
Hang on.
They're ISIS terrorists who are basically barbecuing people in steel cages. You mean somebody volunteered to come to Earth and go through that because they just had nothing better to do today?
Everybody here agreed to come here.
But so, you keep saying that. I want evidence. Show me evidence. What did these guys show you to make you suddenly believe they really knew what they were doing, besides walking through your walls?
Because my process of waking up, I had to understand my being here, and my being here is an example of other people being here, and a lot other people would say similar stories, that I'm here for a purpose. How many thousands of people have you heard, even on the national television, I'm here for a purpose. There's a higher plan. We implicitly understand this because it's in that other part of our consciousness, and there's a firewall preventing full understanding, but we have enough to trust that something good is going to happen because we came here for this purpose. Our very life, our misery in our life was decided by us prior to incarnation.
Paris, I'm sorry, but there are some very interesting inconsistencies in this. It's not a firewall.
It's the firewall.
It's a question. If I don't accept everything you say is true, it's because I'm denying it because I have this firewall going on?
I went through the experience. I went through a very traumatic experience.
Okay, let me go back to the questions. If this scenario is as you have stated, then it means that conscious beings are owning other conscious beings, billions of them, that you say agreed to it, and they agreed to come to a place where not only are they in chains, but mentally, psychologically, psionically, they are entrapped in a bubble so they can never get free. Kind of sounds like hell.
It sounds like marriage. You agree to this turmoil, and you live together, and you...
But what's the point?
But it's not supposed to be that way.
What's the point of marriage? It starts off with a honeymoon and ends in a divorce.
Well, if I said earlier, in our model, from the ruins we've now seen, it looks like this was a rearranged system by an extraordinarily advanced civilization to be a crucible for consciousness. And at some point in that experiment, roughly 66 million years ago, one part of this civilization blew the other part of the civilization to kingdom come with extraordinarily advanced weaponry, leaving decayed ruins in its wake. And we are the poor, 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 poor stepchildren who are living in the midst of these ruins, having no clue at all. In fact, being told deliberately, nothing that you see around you is real. We're going to tell you what reality is. So forget those pictures. Forget what's on those images. Forget what your spacecraft have found. We will define your reality. And you're saying we all agreed to this nonsense? Why?
Yes.
Where's the edification? Where's the emotional and consciousness and spiritual growth if you're in prison and you're deliberately kept in prison and you're not allowed to know you're in prison and you keep doing the same stupid stuff and wind up in the same place and there's no change because you're not allowed to change?
Hey, Richard, can I jump in here for
Absolutely.
Just a second on this?
Yes.
Okay. What I'm getting from this, what I think I'm getting from what Paris is saying, and Paris can tell me if I'm wrong or not, but it sounds like to me that essentially, you know, aeons ago, our souls chose to come to this planet on a grand mission of attaining enlightenment and growth and so on and so forth. And that after we got here, while we were here, the evil race came, the reptilians came, and they essentially locked us here. And we chose not to come into a locked planet, but we chose to come into a good planet where we could grow and evolve and be better. But at some point down that line, we were captured, essentially captured and locked in. And while we're here, our souls are continuing to go over and over and over again in a loop on this planet.
It almost sounds, Michelle, I just had this incredible insight. That sounds like a free energy machine. You trap souls, you make them come back again and again, you extract energy from the process. That's the rent.
You are spiritually trapped here.
So that's why we would choose to come here, because we didn't choose to come into that. We choose to come into a good place.
So where are the damn cops? Where's the police? This obviously is not permitted in a rational, conscious, spiritually uplifted universe. So how did these criminals get away with this, and why do we let them?
Because these criminals convinced humankind to trust them and not to trust the cops. We trusted the criminals. So now free will says that we have to respect free will. Now, if the humankind believes the criminal is the reality, that there is no spiritual progression, that interstellar beings are not real, that we were born here, we suffer, we live in misery and pain, then as long as we believe that system, we cannot escape it. The key is to break that belief. Then you break the hypnosis, you break that brainwashing that these criminal entities, these reptilians, have hypnotized society to believe everything wrong. Inside out, the world is upside down. That's what we're trapped in. And to escape that, we have to reject everything that they built. And that is very difficult because I went through that process. And I can tell you after 10 years, it takes a lot of work and no one wants to do the work to do that. And the goal is spiritual progression. So spiritual progression supersedes misery, pain, and suffering. A spiritual person understands that spiritual growth has no price. It's priceless. They will endure any suffering in order to spiritually grow. For people to say, I live in pain and misery, I'm suffering, they are not spiritual beings, and they're not ready to evolve. They're hypnotized with these reptilian structures who reverse the world, spin it upside down, and convinced us that it's real.
Hey, Paris, I just had a horrible thought. Suppose 7 billion people on this planet are all masochists, and they came here because we all really enjoy the pain.
Yeah. Now, what if this is the delinquent school?
Yeah.
We've been hypnotized.
Well, you keep saying that, but it's almost like hypnosis. Evidence, data, come on, give me some data. You give me an incredible story. It's time now, in the last 10 minutes of the show, provide me some evidence.
Look at the world. It's upside down.
No. Provide me evidence, Paris. It's evidence time now. These guys, if they meant for you to be an ambassador, to wake up civilization, to wake up ourselves, they must have given you some hard data that changes the game, that makes it look like, oh my God, this guy could be right. What's the data? What's the evidence they gave you?
Evidence to prove what?
To prove what you've just been saying for the last 2 hours.
What's enlightenment? Enlightenment is the escape of misery and suffering. What's salvation? Salvation has been in place for thousands of years. Salvation is the end of pain and suffering. The true religious systems, say like Buddhism, they teach the end of pain and suffering. To become one with the universe. When you transcend the pain and suffering, when you raise your vibration and your frequency, you realize that the illusion that the reptilians created is exactly that. You don't have to accept that reality. Mm-hmm. Once you reject that false reality, then you realize that there is no pain and suffering, that there is a lot more, and then that's your escape. That salvation means at the end of your life, you will be able to leave. Because you have transcended that low vibration. As long as you exist in the low vibration, then you hate the government, there's always an enemy, there are terrorists, there's pain and suffering, there's disease, there's taxes, tomorrow's worse than today, that's you're living in a low vibration, which is what the reptilian controllers want. They hijacked it 5,000 years ago.
Mm-hmm. So, and the payoff for them in creating this system is...
they get to suck our energy. They're very egotistical beings, and they feed off of our ego. They drive us to ego, look more beautiful, be richer, be successful. That the ego energy feeds them. So they want you to be more, be more, be more. The spiritual path says be less, right? Reject. The spiritual path says detach from the material world. The reptilians say attach to the material world, be better, be stronger, be more successful, have a bigger weapon, be more powerful. All of that is the false illusion.
Okay.
You have to reject the material world, which is the spiritual path, which is very difficult.
So I think...
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I think that... What Paris would say, or probably would say, is that in terms of looking for proof, I mean, the thing about proof is that, at least spiritually in all the major religions, is that if you're shown hard physical proof, it defeats the point of believing because you haven't learned it for yourself. You've just been shown the answer instead of finding the answer on your own through a spiritual process.
Right.
And perhaps that's the big problem is that Richard, of course, as he should, is asking for proof. But then the spiritual minded person says, I can't show you.
Well, no.
Because once I show it to you, then
Michelle, with all due respect, I have tons of proof that what Paris is saying is theoretically totally possible.
No, I mean, I'm sure, right? But I'm just saying.
The problem I have is not the lack of proof. The problem is the model is so awful and twisted and evil. The subjugation of 7 billion people by another interstellar culture, and nobody lifts a finger to help us.
Richard,
and you're saying we voluntarily put ourselves in this position.
As long as you accept the paradigm, then the more advanced beings, they won't help you because you're not at that level to accept the other reality. Even myself, for me to engage these interstellar cultures, I really had to trust this other part of me that I did not want to trust. And through a very complicated process, I decided to take that route. I walked that path. And I am able to engage these interstellar cultures. In other words, they are there, but they cannot force you to be there. They did not force me to go to that side. So the problem is the human beings have been conditioned, hypnotized to believe that what they see is real, when in fact it is entirely false.
Well, but you said that 2 hours ago. I want to get beyond that. How do we extricate ourselves from the matrix?
You start to tap into that other part of your consciousness to break down that firewall and to you move yourself to that side. Get off the fence and start engaging the true sense of reality. Start engaging the truth, right? This is what we're doing now as a society. The alternative community is speaking more the truth and people are starting to listen, but there's still the firewalls. They're still sitting on the fence because the false reality is telling you those people are crazy, those are radicals, those people are wrong. And so we're having this battle between our consciousness. It's a battle for your consciousness. If human beings reject the reptilian paradigm,
mm-hmm.
we escape their control.
But to escape it is very
difficult.
But if the reptilian paradigm is controlling all means of altered states of consciousness, including things like drugs, marijuana, things like truth in media, not spin, things like not usury but fair price for fair your day's wages. That, in other words, all the incredible injustices and inequities on this planet that are going on 24/7 would be solved if people were a little more enlightened. But you're saying that there is efforts to keep them down on the farm, drugs, stupid, accepting things, and that the payoff is that this interstellar culture is getting energy, psychic energy, consciousness, whatever you want to call it, as part of creating this endless loop where we come back and come back and come back and nothing really ever changes. How do we get off the wheel?
You disengage from the false reality and you engage in the truth.
See, you used an analogy before, which was apartment houses and countries. From our studies, looking at the solar system, whoever did what's all around us was an incredibly material culture. They mastered energy and matter and could create anything in any form, anywhere.
Right.
That kind of godlike power does not go hand in hand with amnesia. In other words, when we talk about the fall, you know, the biblical fall, to me now, looking at our data, it's a fall from being, in essence, a godlike consciousness to being trapped on a mud ball and forced to watch people kill each other in the most insane ways and have no means of ever getting out because someone wants you to stay there for their benefit. That's slavery.
So the problem with advanced races, that if you look at very advanced races, the people who build planets and star systems, there's a temporal difference between them and us. So in other words, 5,000 years of enslavement to us could be a day to them. So they've been gone in their time differential, they've been gone a day. So when they come back, it's 5,000 years in our time differential. It's like time dilation, right?
That's the difference between dimensions in terms of the flow of time or the flow of entropy or whatever. So you're saying that they're not even – these conscious entities are not interstellar. You're saying they're interdimensional.
They're interdimensional.
And for them, 5,000 years was just yesterday afternoon.
Yeah, so it says, hey, Charlie, let's look back on that Earth, the planet we built.
But again,
and see how it's doing. And say, talking, oh, my God, what's happened?
We're talking about consciousness interfering and enslaving other consciousness. Now, you say there's an agreement. Why would anybody in their right mind come to a place like this for education when there's all kinds of other things? And you say that this drastic interregnum only began 5,000 years ago. Well, the Earth we live on is 4.5 billion years old. So why has the last 5,000 years been allowed to take the prize? Why isn't normalcy returned so conscious evolution can continue?
It goes back to spiritual enlightenment, because let's say you came here and then it was taken over by this reptilian control race, and let's say you made a lot of mistakes, let's say you believed the paradigm, and let's say you did some bad things, you damaged your karma. Now you have to come back. Then you come back, and then you get more brainwashed. You believe the false reality. You do more bad things. You start invading countries. You start killing people. You start torturing witches. Now you've damaged your karma more. So now you have to come back. So what they do is they tempt you to damage your karma. At the end of your life, you have no choice but to come back to fix your karma, because they understand karma, and most of the world doesn't understand it. If you understand karma, you will live your life without doing bad things to people. You will do everything to prevent it, but you don't understand that because you have been brainwashed.
Paris, I'm sorry. We got to leave it there. We're at the end of the show, but we're going to have you back. I want to companion you at some point with a good friend of ours, Georgia, and I think that would be a most intriguing conversation, because when we get into the elementals of who are we, why are we here, why are we here again and again, I mean, these are huge questions.
Right.
Well, I want to thank everyone. Thank you for joining us on this side of the other side of midnight. Tomorrow morning, we're going to have a remarkable guest. Barbara Honegger is coming back to be with us. And until then, third star on the left, straight on till morning. Good night, everyone.